Welcome to our fourth show.
In this show, we will be welcoming our new rector, Mr. Griffiths.
We will also be talking about Bob Pegg's visit to the school and George MacDonald.
Another person we'll be welcoming is Katrina, who will be our book reviewer. She will be reading an extract from a George MacDonald book.
First, we have an interview with Mr. Griffiths.
Hello, Mr. Griffiths, and how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm just great.
Good.
I'd like to welcome you to, on behalf of the TGSI Radio. If you don't mind, just start with the same quick-fire questions I gave to Mr. Swan. Just a nice little comparison there. Right. Black Forest gatto or fruit salad?
Black Forest gatto.
Football or rugby?
Football.
Novel or an autobiography?
Novel.
Favourite author?
Oh, that's really difficult. Because I'm an English teacher, lecturer. Favourite author? Probably Graham Greene.
Right. Favourite film?
Favourite film? Oh, goodness me. Quite difficult, that as well, isn't it? I'll have to think about that one. I really would, because I don't think I've got a favourite film, to be quite honest. There's a few films that I like, but I tend to quite like dramas rather than comedies, I suppose. But
really?
there's a lot of them, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about the Arctic Monkeys or the Kooks?
The Arctic Monkeys? I like the Arctic Monkeys.
Why don't these teachers know about these bands? No! Oh, right. Well done, I'm proud of your taste.
Okay.
Okay, so, for those who haven't met you yet, could you tell us a bit about your teaching background?
Yep, I started teaching in Aberdeen in 1992 at a secondary school, St. Macher Academy, which is an inner city school.
Mm-hmm.
And taught English there for about 3.5 years. Moved on to another school, Kemney Academy, which I taught English in there, but as assistant head of department, and then became head of department at that school. And was there till about 2001, and then left that school and went to Bankery Academy, but I was assistant head and then deputy head, so did a little bit of teaching there, but not too much.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, obviously I've moved to the Golden School, so
yay.
Pleased to be here.
So what made you want to make that step from being English teacher to a rector?
Okay, I think with each job that you do, you start to see things a bit differently, and there's a mixture of different reasons as to why you want to do things. As an English teacher, I really enjoy teaching English. I think it's one of those subjects that you feel quite passionate about, and you really get involved in, and really love reading, and want to encourage that. And that's why I went into teaching, because I really enjoyed my subject so much and wanted to be able to teach people as well. Well, you start to run your own department in school, it's really, really good as well, because you then get some responsibility and be able to make a difference, or you feel that you can. And I think really that's why I wanted to become a head teacher, because I think that the most important and perhaps most daunting or difficult bit is that you've got a lot of responsibility, but you also have a lot of opportunity, I think, to try and do some really positive things and make a real difference to people. So that's a really important reason for me to be a head teacher. And I think that there's nothing better than seeing young people who come to secondary school and grow up into young adults and leave the school having achieved a whole range of different things. And I find that really rewarding. And to be able to try and steer that for the school, I think it's a big task, but it's something that I think is a really, really good opportunity.
So aside from being able to watch this progression and being able to help so many people throughout the school, is there anything else that you're looking forward to about your post?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of new people. I think that really, I think one of the most important parts of my job is to be able to spend a lot of time talking to people and listening to people. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not always good. But, I think people are very important. Schools are all about people, they're all about the pupils, they're all about the staff and the parents, the curriculum and learning and teaching obviously is vital, but it's all back to the people at the end of the day. So I've met obviously quite a few members of staff, but it takes a bit of time, and I've increasingly, like now, I'm meeting more pupils in the school, but it's good. I really enjoy that side of things, and I think once you start to become a bit more familiar with a new place, You know, you start on day one and don't really particularly know anyone, but increasingly in time you do, and that's a really good thing.
And the job will become more enjoyable as you get more settled in.
It will. I mean, I'm really enjoying it anyway, yeah. And even though we're in the midst of an inspection, which is a bit of an unusual start.
It's putting you in the deep end.
Well, it does to some extent, but no, I think, you know, the more familiar you get with a school and the more people you meet, the more settled in that you feel, but I'm sure that'll happen very quickly.
Well, that's nice. Do you have any particular plans for the school?
Yes, I mean, I have got my own views in terms of what I think are important in the school. I mean, I've already mentioned some of that, I suppose, in terms of putting people first, and that's always the way that I would approach things. I think that there's a lot of change in education that's happening at the moment and will happen over the next few years. So I think we'll find that in the next 3 to 5 years that we'll be looking at a different approach to some extent to the curriculum and what's on offer, especially perhaps in younger years in the school, and trying to make sure that the curriculum meets the needs of all of the pupils in the schools as well as it can. I think it's really important to have youngsters in classes that are enjoying their learning and having fun whilst they're learning where they can as well. And I really think it's important that we look at as many ways as possible of making interesting learning and teaching opportunities for everyone. I think staff tend to enjoy it better as well when they're finding that the pupils are really responding really well to the work, and it's much more satisfying. I think that you know, we'd like, in simple terms, I suppose, the school is a school that's got a good history and a lot of really really excellent things in the school, but nowhere's perfect, and there's always things that we can build on. It's not just up to me to do that. I think the most important thing really is for me to work with clearly the management team that are my immediate colleagues, but all the staff, the pupils and the parents and the local community, to try and gauge what the direction is that everyone wants to go in, including my own views on that, which clearly would be a starting point for that as well. But I see us building really on what we've got as major strengths, but looking forward to making opportunities for moving the school forward in a 21st century way.
So you mentioned parents there. So as well as the children and the teachers, would you like to see more parental involvement in things?
I think the school's got a remarkable amount of parental involvement, which is really, really good. The school I came from, Bantry Academy, had a good supportive parental base of people as well, which is important. And I think that the amount of extracurricular activities which are supported by parents, the things that go on during the course of the day in terms of what happens in school, again, I've had some contact with parents who are very, very helpful and very willing to get involved. There's a lot of people who do spend their time trying to support their own children in terms of the school, but also the school in general as well. And I think that's a really important thing. I will certainly, I think, want to engage with parents as much as possible, so that we can try to include as many people as possible in the ways that they can. Clearly, there's a limit in terms of time to what people can do, and people have their own lives and they have jobs and so on. But obviously, I'm a father myself, and I think it's important to try and put something back into school where you can, and to support what the school's doing. And I think it's already a very very strong starting point anyway.
Yeah, we are really lucky to have so much parental involvement in extracurricular activities.
Definitely.
And there are just so many here, so are you planning on adding any more to the agenda? Or?
It's difficult to know where to start, isn't it, really, because there is so much. I think the inspectors, certainly even so far, I think are quite pleased with the amount of extracurricular opportunities that there are in school. And I'm really pleased that it covers a whole range of things in terms of sport. Massive amount of sport that goes on, which is great. There's a lot of music. There's new things even in the week and a bit since I've been here that have started up the ballroom dancing, which probably isn't my cup of tea. But I think it's really, really good that people are interested in that, and I'm really impressed with the number of ideas that pupils and that staff have that they want to do. And I think I'll certainly want to continue saying yes to people. I think it's really important where someone has an idea and they're enthusiastic to say, yep, okay, we'll do that. So I wouldn't want to specifically say, yeah, we're going to do X, Y, or Z as an additional thing. because I think that partly depends on what people want to do. And I wouldn't say I think, you know, that we're going to impose things, or we're definitely going to do these things, but where people have ideas about whether it's sport, music, whatever it might be, I'm certainly very, very keen on doing that.
Oh, that's great. Well, you've mentioned that you think you can definitely handle all the responsibility of so many staff, but do you not find the idea of so many pupils and so many staff so daunting?
It is a bit, must admit. The first day in school, the first Monday, was a strange feeling, because obviously you go from somewhere that you're familiar to somewhere where you're not. And it happens to all of us, though. Mm. You'll obviously leave school soon enough and be faced with different things in life, and it's one of these things that happens. You just have to handle change, and but it certainly is a big change, because clearly the head teacher of a school, in a sense, I think you can probably feel quite lonely even at times if you're on your own, I suppose, making decisions doing the things that you do on a daily basis. I think the most important thing, though, is that you do have colleagues and staff that are approachable and that feel that they can approach you. My style very much is, I would hope, that people can approach me, and that people can knock on my door, pupils as well as staff. And, you know, if my door's open, then I'm more than happy to speak to people. If it's closed, it's probably closed because I'm in a meeting or on a telephone or something. But if people want to talk to me informally about things, I think that's really, really important as well. So, yeah, it can be daunting, because you know that you've got responsibility. But with that side of it comes really, really positive things as well, because you only know that it's a daunting thing because it's an important thing, and because it's important, you want to do the best that you can. And I think hopefully I'm a sort of person that tries to rise to a challenge rather than tries to avoid one, and I think that there are really so many good opportunities in that.
Well, the assemblies were actually your first opportunity to see how many pupils were in the school and see us all together, but were you at all nervous? Because I would have been terrified.
the assemblies weren't too bad. I think it's always nervous when you're speaking to a large group of people, or when you're speaking to people for the first time, although I suppose you get used to doing it in your job anyway, so that even if it is people that you don't know, that's fine. It's probably a bit more helpful as well in that the assemblies here are reasonably formal, but the school I came from were reasonably formal as well, so you get used to that sort of way of doing things. But you're right in that you want to make a good impression, like we all do, hopefully. You know, the first time you meet anyone, first impressions count, and I'm not sure what people's first impressions would be. It's always very difficult to gauge, but it's also a chance and an opportunity to try to get across, I think, what are quite important messages in that sort of situation. And coming into an assembly for the first time, meeting pupils, you're saying things about yourself and how you present things, and also about what you, I think, value as being part of school life and part of life beyond that as well. So in that sense, it is it's daunting in that you know that you're wanting to try to give a good impression, but also try to get some key messages over. And I think, again, the way that I'll carry on doing assemblies would very much be by trying to keep assemblies on topical themes sometimes, things that are in the news and current affairs, things that are to do with society and how the world works, things to do with our responsibilities as people in the world. Although it's early days at the moment, I think I'd really very much like to encourage a lot of youngsters being involved in assemblies and presentations and performances and so on as well, where we can. So I think you're right. It's always a bit nerve-wracking to begin with, but once you've done it a few times, you get there in the end.
So finally, can you identify any main priorities other than you've already mentioned regarding the school? Do you think there'll be any challenges or...?
I think that one of the challenges will be, to begin with, responding to what the inspectors ask of us to do, because the inspectors will have an agenda of things for us to deal with, and that means that you have to address it. You don't have a choice about it. You have to look at them, and whatever that they come up with will be things that they think will improve the school, and so that will be the first challenge that I'll have to try to address. I still think that it's very important to listen to what people say and what their view of the school is, and to ally that to my own views. I've spoken to the teachers a little bit about what my views are, and I would intend, once the inspectors have gone, to meet up with pupil council representatives and talk to them a little bit about, in a bit more detail, okay. about what my views are, and ask them what their views are. And I know that there's been some work done on that already. But no, I think it comes down to some simple things. I think schools and education can be quite complicated, but so there's no point making it more complicated than it gets anyway. And it comes down to the simple things like having really good quality learning, good quality curriculum, lots of extracurricular experiences and links to the outside world, making sure that we've all got the best sort of resources, that includes the best teachers that we can get, but the best technology that we can get and everything else that we need in classes and beyond classes as well. And that each pupil's got the opportunity to do the best that they can, to shine in the things that they're good at and to develop the skills and the things that they need help with, and to have the right sort of atmosphere to be able to do that. I think there's a lot of good things there already, but there clearly will be things that we can do to improve the school, and but they will always come back to those sorts of key areas, and how we do them is my job. My job really, in simple terms, is to help everyone else do their job. And that means to be able to help the pupils do the best that they can. And if I can do that bit well, then everything hopefully should fit into place. So time will tell.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for coming on this interview.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I hope that you really enjoy your time here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rhiannon.
Next up, we have Matthew reading a passage about George MacDonald.
George MacDonald was a Scottish author, poet, and Christian minister. Though no longer a household name, his works, particularly his fairy tales and his fantasy novels, have inspired deep admiration in such notables as J.R.R. Tolkien. C.S. Lewis wrote that he regarded MacDonald as his master, picking up a copy of Phantastes one day in a train station, presumably from a railway station bookstall, he began to read. "A few hours later," said Lewis, "I knew I had crossed a great frontier." Even Mark Twain, who initially despised MacDonald, became friends with him, and there is some evidence that Twain was influenced by MacDonald. The man who was to inspire such feeling was born on December the 10th, 1824, in Huntly. His father, a farmer, was one of the MacDonalds of Glencoe, a direct descendant of one of the families that suffered in the massacre of 1692. The Doric dialect frequently appears in the dialogue of some of his non-fantasy novels. MacDonald grew up influenced by his Congregational church. He took up his degree at the University of Aberdeen and then went to London, studying at Highbury College for Congregational ministry. In 1850, he was appointed pastor of the Trinity Congregational Church, Arundel. But his sermons met with little favour and his salary was cut in half. Later, he was engaged in ministerial work in Manchester. He left that because of poor health, and after a short sojourn in Algiers, he settled in London, taught for some time at the University of London. His best-known works are Phantastes, The Princess and the Goblin, At the Back of the North Wind, and Lilith, all fantasy novels, and fairy tales such as The Light Princess, The Golden Key, and The Wise Woman. "I write not for children," he wrote, "but for childlike, whether they be 5 or 50 or 75. MacDonald also published some volumes of sermons, the pulpit not having proved an unreservedly successful venue. MacDonald also served as a mentor to Lewis Carroll, who wrote Alice in Wonderland. It was MacDonald's advice and enthusiastic reception of Alice by MacDonald's three young daughters that convinced Carroll to submit Alice for publication. Carroll, one of the finest Victorian photographers, also created photographic portraits of the girls and their brother Greville. MacDonald was acquainted with most of the literary luminaries of the day, as a surviving group photograph shows him in Tennyson, Dickens, Willie Wilkie Collins, Trollope, Ruskin, Lewes, and Thackeray. While in America, he was a friend of Longfellow and Walt Whitman. In 1877, he was given a civil list pension. He died on September 18, 1905 in Ashstead, Surrey. An interesting fact is rock group The Waterboys titled their album Room to Roam after a passage in MacDonald's Fantasties. Now Katrina will read an extract from one of his books.
One of the more popular books by George MacDonald was The Princess and the Goblin. It tells the story of a young princess, Irene, who falls in love with Curdie, a miner, and of their struggles against the goblins. Here is a short extract. The stalactites dripped icy water down Curdie's neck, making him shiver. The goblins were just ahead, the lanterns shining on the walls, creating eerie shadows. Down here in the mines was a colony of them, goblins. Curdie had to help Irene or she would die. His mind on her, he did not notice the rock. He slipped and went tumbling down a rock face into the arms of the waiting goblins. This is a very interesting book for young romantics, and it was portrayed brilliantly in the school play 2 years ago.
The last item on the show is an interview with Bob Pegg, who came into the school to talk about George MacDonald.
...2005 saw the centenary of the death of George MacDonald, one of Huntley's famous, more famous people, a famous author. And in school today, we've got Bob Pegg, who's working with Deveron Arts at the moment, and he came into school to talk to our S1 students about George MacDonald. So, Bob, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do and your reason for coming into school today?
Sure, yeah. I'm a storyteller and a musician, and I've been living in the Highlands for 16 or 17 years now, came up from Yorkshire before that, and at the moment I stay over in Strathpeffer, near Dingwall, sort of northwest of Inverness, and Deveron Arts asked me if I would put together a little book, sort of booklet, of a story walk, a George MacDonald story walk around Huntley. So the idea is that you take the book and start off probably in the square, and follow the directions in the book, stop at particular places in the town, and there'll be a story there about that place, which you can read, or if you're a teacher, say you can actually tell the story to a group of children, or a tour guide, you can, you know, use it in the same way, and then you go on to the next place until you perhaps come back to where you started. And the stories themselves will be a mixture of traditional tales, little bits which have been stolen from MacDonald himself, stories which use ideas from George MacDonald, because he had lots of rather powerful motifs, if you like, that he used in his stories. He wrote around 40 books. He was very prolific and in his day, quite successful Victorian fantasy author. In fact, some people call him the father of modern fantasy writing, you know. So people like, I mean, C.S. Lewis paid tribute to him. T.S. Eliot was a fan. W.H. Auden. People like Terry Pratchett arguably might not be writing as they are today without MacDonald.
So would you say he has a relevance for people today?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I think he's quite hard to read, perhaps, for young people today, because he's a Victorian writer. He uses lots of words which you simply don't use. But what I think MacDonald has got is an astonishing imagination. And once he's taken you through one of his portals, through a door in an attic, or through a mirror into another world. Talking about mirrors, by the way, he was a pal of Lewis Carroll. And in fact, Lewis Carroll used to turn up at MacDonald's house, because MacDonald ended up living in London half the year, and in Italy the other half. He used to go to Italy for the summer, because he had he had bad lungs, and in fact three of his own children died of TB. Yes, Lewis Carroll used to turn up at the house and try the manuscript of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland on MacDonald's children to see if it, you know, was any good or not. And I think that encouraged him to go ahead and get it published. But as I was saying, once MacDonald's taken you through one of these portals, then his imagination ranges from the just as simply the light fantastic, if you like, very, very playful fantasy, through to some really, really dark stuff. And you can see him also, apart from fantasy writing, as a sort of precursor of the kind of imagery that you find in horror movies. I mean, he makes specific reference to werewolves, for example. There's a passage in the novel, his late novel Lilith, which is a very, very dark thing, where the hero, it's not really a hero, but the protagonist, a man called Vane, a strange, rather isolated character, in the middle of a deep, dark wood, is woken in the night to see a group of people dancing. And as his eyes, he's a bit short-sighted, but as his eyes get used to what he's looking at, he realizes that their faces are, in fact, skulls, although they still have eyes in their open. You know, it's straight out of any number of contemporary horror films.
So, did he use his life in Huntly in the northeast of Scotland to inspire him? In what ways would you say that his inspiration came from here?
Yeah, the landscapes in his books are very northeast. He talks about, in the book Lilith again, a view through the mirror. There's is a plain with mountains behind it, for example, a bit like the view from Huntly with the mountains around. He, apart from these fantasy novels, he was also celebrated as a writer of just straightforward fiction, and he used northeast dialect.
Doric.
He used Doric in a number of, as I say, quite celebrated books, which are based upon the day-to-day life of Huntly and its surrounds. Today I've been looking at the fantasy work rather than the sort of straight novels. The fantasy books are still, are today more widely read than the novels of everyday life.
Could you maybe recommend a book that students of the school might like to pick up and read if they're interested in George MacDonald?
There's a Penguin collection called, I think it's called, The Complete Tales, or The Complete Fairy Tales of George MacDonald. They're not all books about fairies. They don't all have fairies in them. That would be worth looking at, because it's got lots of shorter stories, plus extracts from some of the longer books, and that will give you a good taster of MacDonald's work. And then you can go on to explore some of the longer works. You know, maybe some of it is downloadable, by the way.
Okay.
The Princess and the Goblin is probably his best known work. It was turned into an animation just a few years ago, and I believe the school did a production of the Princess.
2 years ago.
Absolutely. There you go. So that's probably his best known work, and I would say I enjoyed reading that a lot. It's a lot of fun. These books are.
It's great fun to see the kids putting it on the show.
I'd love to see it. But of course, there's a very, very good bookshop in Huntly, which has a whole MacDonald selection. So either the library or the bookshop is the place to go to. And Annie Lamb in the bookshop will, I'm sure, be very, very happy to just discuss MacDonald with anybody. You know, you don't have to buy a book just to go in the book. Just look at them and talk to her.
Well, thank you very much. It's good you can give us the time to come and speak to us, and hope you enjoy the rest of your visit to the Gordon Schools and to Huntly.
Thank you very much.
Sadly, we have come to the end of our show.
We just have time to tell you about a story called The Seal Killer, which has been read by Bob Peck.
That can be found on the same webpage as this show. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Tune in next time.